Don't miss your free chance to tune into Benzinga's very own bootcamp series on November 20th. If you're looking to dive into new concepts and grow your account, this one's for you.
Javi.
What's up? What's up? What's up? What's up? Welcome to Benzinga Cannabis Hour. How you doing, Mr. Elliot Lane?
I'm good. It has been far too long, I feel like, since I've been on. It's probably been like in reality like 2 weeks, but it feels like longer, doesn't it? Like, does it feel like it's been a while since I've been on Cannabis Hour? Maybe that's just me. Maybe,
I don't know. I see your face often, so it all gets blurred. Oh,
the privilege is mine to see you as much as possible. But before we get into too much of a love fest, because I can go on and on about how much I love Javi. Welcome, y'all. I know we're going to get people coming in as they get done with Spencer. I mean, Spencer's cool and all. We're cooler. But it's been a sec. So, I mean, honestly, Javi, a lot has happened over the past 2 weeks. Obviously, a ton of earnings news. What's your sentiment, man? How are you feeling about Q3?
Pretty positive. Overall, pretty positive. I see, you know, the established players continue to assert and really establish, you know, their mm-hmm. positions as market leaders, clear winners out of all this, right? For anyone who's interested in more specific insights into some of the MSOs like you know, Trulieve and Verano Holdings and Curaleaf, you can check out our episode from last Tuesday. We had Todd Harrison on.
MSO gang.
Hashtag. Top dog MSO gang. Chief Investment Officer at CB1 Capital. He had great insights into the earnings season.
Can you just like be a part of the MSO gang? Like, can I just like put hashtag MSO gang on my profile? Like,
there's certain requirements. Like you need to be a big fan of US MSOs and kind of bearish on Canada, right? it's kind of a combo, right? A lot of people in the MSO gang are pretty anti-Canadian stocks. Like some of them are aggressive about it.
That's funny. Honestly, that's pretty funny to me. I've never been a super big bear on Canada. But that being said, there's an obvious difference between the two markets.
I mean, right? Honestly, I understand all of it. I'm passionate about information and finance. I don't get that level of passion and commitment toward, you know, stock investing, right? Like, it's the only thing in your mind. People are like, oh, Canada sucks. It's like, okay, what? Like, just chill. Don't buy the stock.
Well, Benzinga recommends diversity. Diversify your portfolio. We're all about that. Tons of great cannabis stocks. You know, in interesting...
Talking about Canadian stocks, yeah. Or do you have something before? Or like, I have a couple insights, you know, I would like to recommend around Canadian
stocks. No, do your thing first while we're on the topic.
The bearishness, right? Bank of America came out with two very cool reports today. One was in Canopy Growth. The other one was in Cronos. Neither one was particularly bullish. BofA analyst Lisa Lewandowski, however you want to pronounce it, says Canopy Growth is a show-me story as it posts mixed progress in KPIs. Right now, she has a neutral rating on Canopy stock and a price target that has been lowered from $17.50 US or 22 Canadian to 19 Canadian. So like her argument is, even though there's long-term potential for legal cannabis in the industry, driven by U.S. federal legalization, the Canadian market is really evolving fast and the profitability isn't really there.
No, I just want to comment on Canopy real quick because I'm not as bearish on Canopy as a lot of people are. And granted, I'm not an analyst. Like, I'm not a super amazing big researcher into, you know, stock charts and everything like that. But Canopy has such an easy entry. My dog agrees with me, if you can hear the squeaky toy in the background. But Canopy has a great entrance into the U.S. market, you know, once federal legalization hits. They have a great footprint already with CBD products that can transition into different other product lines in cannabinoids. I mean, honestly, like, I feel like the footprint is there. I feel like some of this is fodder. Some of this is truth to where they're at right now. But for the long-term haul, I'm kind of bullish.
Yeah,
is
me
that
too.
Bad?
No, like, no. I don't see them going anywhere. I was just having coffee with a colleague like an hour ago. And he was asking me like, hey, what's up with Canopy? I'm like, should I hold it? Again, this is not a recommendation. It's like, yeah, dude, like just 5 years. I don't see it going anywhere. I don't see Tilray going anywhere. I don't see Curaleaf going anywhere. I don't see Cresco Labs going anywhere. I don't see GTI going anywhere, right? It's maybe others, many others will fail. We've seen a lot of that, right? Like the B, C, and D class kind of operators liquidating assets one after another. But, you know,
well, and I think as long as Canopy continues to wrap up a lot of other companies like they did with Supreme, you know, like they did with a few of these other Canadian based companies that MSO Gang doesn't like. No, I won't speak for them, but I think wrapping up the footprint while they're in Canada right now it's a perfectly fine thing to do right now.
Well, and again, Bank of America seems pretty much closer to the MSO Gang in that sense. The other one was Cronos Group, CRON. We were just talking about Canopy Growth. That's CGC. This is CRON on the NASDAQ. Again, Lewandowski reiterated an underperform rating on Cronos, lowering the price target from $6.50 to $5.
How can you not be bearish on them right now? I don't know how anybody can justify a positive sentiment on Cronos.
$1.1 billion in cash, partnership with Altria, hefty investment in science and innovation. There's some reasons, three strong reasons not to be bearish on Cronos.
All right, fair enough. You know what? Fair enough. I'll give you that. But I will say this, having $1 billion in cash isn't always a positive. Sometimes it's a lack of direction. And granted, that direction could easily be used and utilized with $1 billion in cash. I'd like to have $1 billion. I'll take $1 million if you're bored. But, you know, with that in mind, like I don't know. $1 billion in cash seems like a lot to me, you know, without any, you know, and I don't know. That's just my personal opinion. That being said, you present three amazing reasons. So Tiny Pie Media, great question, man. I say no, but I will say this. I think if you are not a major brand right now, you do have to be at least relatively close to the top five of being like a single state operator. So like, you know, you can be in a younger tier three MSO as well. But like, if you're just a single state operator, you need to be top three, top five. Otherwise, like I don't see you competing in the slightest. So I think there is a level that where people just will fall off. But for me, I don't think you have to be a tier one MSO to survive the future of cannabis. What do you think, Javi?
No, agreed. I mean, especially for brands, right? I still see a lot of space for new brands to emerge. Of course, the established brands are not going anywhere. I don't see Cookies going anywhere, right? Lowo. Or, you know, Kiva, but there's space for many other brands. It's like, so the question was, do you only see established brands surviving? My response is definitely no. I mean, I see a mix of stuff.
Real quick. I know we got to get Scott on. We have an awesome interview with a huge debt financer in the space coming up that, you know, I'd like him to break down into layman's terms. I know we have an agenda with him, but in terms of the importance of debt financing. But before we get there, Javi, what about InMed Pharmaceutical yesterday, man? Ooh, just blowing up.
What did you see? Because it just blew up.
It was a research report that they released like certain excerpts of the valuation increase by Edison Investment Research. And it was just because really their acquisition of BayMedica apparently to them transitioned their company to just a different face. I mean, honestly, like INM, like solid release yesterday. I mean, just the movement it spurned alone. And if you didn't listen to it, Cannabis Daily had talked about it this morning. INM, is it competition or complementary to Sundial? I'm just going to leave it there. It's not clickbait, I promise. In any case, it's nice to have another stock in this space that's US listed get a chance to shine in this space.
Yeah. No, I agree. Talking about U.S. listings, what do you think of Poseidon's new cannabis ETF?
I'm sorry, I was just laughing at Mitch, the holiday touch with the edible pumpkin pie. That's awesome. Honestly, like, and the THC line drinking straws, honestly, there's some creative products coming out right now.
Fun. Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, Javi, what was your question?
What do you think of the new ETF, Poseidon Investment Management, the famous cannabis hedge fund? are almost, you know, one of the longest running cannabis investment funds run by Emily and Morgan Paxia, good friends of the house, advisors to Benzinga Cannabis, of course. They launched a new ETF called the Advisor Shares Poseidon Dynamic Cannabis ETF, PSDN, on the New York Stock Exchange. Pretty cool.
I like it. I think it's really cool. That being said, you know, if you're an ETF lover like Spencer is, my dog likes it too. I'm sorry about the squeaky toy. But if you like ETFs, Morgan and Emily Paxia and the Advisor Shares team have put together really the who's who of NASDAQ and NYSE listed companies in the industry. So, you know, with that in mind, you know, you have Sundial, you have High Tide, maybe not Canopy from Canada, but you have Weed Maps, you have AgriFi, you have Grow Generation, you Urban Grow, kind of the ancillary side that's listed on those U.S. exchanges. It's a really cool representation of non-USO plant touching operations.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely love that at the global view. Talking about bigger views again, I like segues today. I'm a segue guy. I don't know what's going on. My mind is always right.
Oh, to answer Mike's question, absolutely. Now, do you see Mike? Okay. Is Tilray still good long term? I would click on it, but I don't have the power to. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't give advice. I'll say it again. Javi said it 3 times already, but absolutely. Anyways, yeah. Javi.
We have 2 guests today. Very cool. So one we'll bring on right now, Scott Jordan from Alternative Finance Network. And stick around. After that, we have an amazing, exclusive, special interview with the one and only Fab Five Freddy and Bernard Noble. Bernard spent 7 years in federal prison for 2 freaking joints. 2. Of course, the guy is African American. Oh, what a surprise. You know that the system is broken. But he is not bitter about it. And we had an amazing, super cool, super interesting interview.
It was an incredible discussion. And honestly, Fab Five Freddy needs more airtime. That man is incredible. And I can't wait for you guys to see that interview. But Javier, first and foremost,
Scott Jordan, Alternative Finance Network. Mr. Jordan.
There he is.
A cannabis hour. Let me see. There you go. Not working. Got you.
What's up, Scott? How you doing, man?
Doing great, man. How are you? I almost dropped by Detroit yesterday on my way home from Miami for, you know, there's a big one-day deal that Derek Dickow is doing at the Thompson Hotel. There was a couple of zingers there, but not the right zingers. I'm like, oh, okay.
My man,
Bobby and Patrick still want me to be on their show, even though there's a big event that supposedly was sold out there.
I'm going to tell you right now, it's Elliot, because you tend to make my brother and I one person. but it's okay. It's okay. You're not the only one in this industry. You're far from the only one in this industry, I promise you. But with that said, obviously, you know, we should have been there. But, man, you got to stop by Detroit next time. That's where the cool people are at.
I'm going to do that. I promise. Next show, I will definitely I will definitely do that. I'd love to see your digs before you get merged in and, you know, become in some kind of big high-rise building. Or maybe you're in a high-rise right now, although it looks like
we are. I think we have – I think we're in the Campus Martius building where Quicken Loans is. But yeah. I think it's, like, the largest indoor waterfall right outside our offices.
It was. It used to be. They built a new one in China that
that's rude.
But this one, I think it was built by Rocket Mortgage and Microsoft. They funded this massive, it's like what like 80 story.
Nope. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's insanity. But anyways, you know, we can talk about your expertise on waterfalls all day long if you'd like, but I think you do something else in the space too, which is offer some money to some cool people. Tell us about you, man.
Sure. So the Alternative Finance Network was started 2.5 years ago. Out of an idea that I had that the cannabis industry needed to be treated with dignity, respect, and be able to have equal access to loans and other forms of financing that did not require them to give up their equity. Cannabis business owners are some of the hardest working people in the world. They are treated vastly unfairly, and the system is rigged against them, and the playing field is not level. It's illevel, if that's a word. Or unlevel. And so I wanted to do what I could to level that up in the financing area and be able to provide people with debt and the same opportunity that Weed Maps was able to take advantage of starting back in the early days when I had to arm wrestle with Justin to take some debt instead of equity. And in the end, when Silver Spike bought him last year, he was $150 million ahead because he listened to me. I mean, that's a pretty good month, I would say. Yeah. And, you know, it helps having experience. It helps having been around the block several times and being able to help young guys, you know, like yourself, take advantage of this unprecedented opportunity. It is just enormously wonderful, particularly in the financing area, because of all of the changes that are going on daily and weekly. I mean, even just since I saw you guys in Vegas, we've had some seismic changes and some incredibly good things happen to the industry. And so, you know, I focus in the debt area. I help companies that are looking to grow utilizing bank, credit union, life insurance, private money, leasing companies' money, and other monies to grow the business and retain 100% of the remaining equity they have.
I just had a quick follow-up question. I think this will set us up very well for the conversation here. Can you talk about, just very briefly if you can, which I this is a hard question to do briefly, the importance of debt so far in cannabis, and just a little bit in layman's terms so that we understand that the equity has not been the backbone of this industry as similar as it has to other industries. So how has debt helped this industry thrive?
Debt does is it allows you to grow without giving up your precious equity at the worst time possible. So the worst time possible is the earliest stages of your company because you have the least value. You haven't gotten traction. You don't have earnings. You're not probably even showing a profit, maybe not even EBITDA positive. And so you're at your worst and you're selling something that you can't get back. It's not like a child where if you sold it to someone, you might be able to buy it back or a dog. Equity is like virginity. Once you give it up, gone. It ain't never coming back. You can't unring the bell, okay?
What the hell just happened?
That was crappy. I mean, honestly, it's a good metaphor.
Bringing in sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Oh, my God.
It's 420. It's 420.
It's 420. Lord, I need a gummy after that one. That was incredible, Scott. Thank you. That was great, though. Like, honestly, the layman's terms breakdown, we talk about that all the time. And, you know, why, like, you know, understanding why it's been so important has been something that I don't think we've touched on enough. So I appreciate that. Javier, I interrupted you before, though.
All good. I'm just playing around with the comments a little bit. I was going to ask a little bit of the same, right? Like, what's the benefit of you know, as like running a business myself as well, I'm always faced with this question, right? And whenever we sit down with Benzinga to decide what we're going to do with Oakland Theo, for instance, right? We always question like, okay, should we continue to fund ourselves, go find debt, or go raise equity, right? You know, and people ask us, hey, are you taking money, right? And to me, that almost sounds, you know, like the obvious choice, equity in many occasions. It's like, okay, I am not assuming any real big risk, right? It's like someone else is assuming the risk for me. Of course, I'm giving out a part of my company, but at the same time, I'll end up owning 10% of a company that's worth $100 million instead of 100% of a company that's worth nothing, right? So,
well, but that's, no, but the point is that you've got another option. And if you have another option, you owe it to your shareholders and yourself and your family and your future in-laws to do the best possible thing for your company, which is to borrow when you're at the weakest position possible. That's the thing. You want to consider where you're at. And let's just take the example of Weedmaps. This is, I've been a perfect example. They sold for $1.5 billion. Mm-hmm. They were willing to give up 10% of the company for the $2 million that I got them in debt. So if they give that up now, when they sell for $1.5 billion, 10% of that is $150 million for $2 million, of which part of the interest was tax deductible because they're non-plant touching. You know,
wow dude.
So you're going to pay $500,000-$600,000 versus $150 million? I mean, you know, yeah. I didn't get an MBA, but
the numbers are encouraging, though. Like, I'm looking at Viridian Steel Tracker, for instance, and comparing. So last year, by the start of November, we raised our deals totaled $3.6 billion. Out of that, $2.28 billion were in equity and $1.3 billion was in debt. So more than double, or actually double equity raises versus debt raises in deals. This year, it's $6.7 billion in equity and $4.6 billion in debt. So we really see that gap closing substantially, right? So we're moving in the same, in the right direction, you think, right? Or not?
Yes and no. I mean, here's the thing. It's not really an apples to apples comparison because not all companies are eligible for debt. And at the beginning, usually you have to give up equity unless you're bringing in your own equity. You've got to give up some equity because you've got to have an upside to the investors when this, your progress is at the riskiest. You know, they don't want debt-like return with equity-type risks. That's something that you can tell your viewers. You know, if you're going to take equity-like risk, you want equity-like returns, not debt-like returns.
Fair enough. So there's been, I mean, looking at the cannabis industry in a very broad sense, debt has received, I think, some bad press. And probably unneededly so, in the sense of the high percentages. Moving forward, though, it seems to be changing, but really more specifically right now for the tier one MSOs, some for the tier two. As we move forward, how quickly does that change for the whole industry?
The whole industry is changing right now before our very eyes. As we're watching it, good companies that find the right sources to get capital at low rates can obtain it. Not all of them have to do the raising, you know, by themselves. When they find, myself or another bank that is, quietly lending, they can take advantage of it as long as they have the requisite financials and they approach that lender in a professional way. That's what we do. I mean, we represent borrowers to lenders, and we know what the lenders want, and we know how to put together a package that the lenders are going to look at. And because we do it on a regular basis, we know how to give the lenders what they want. And so we go right to the top of the list of looking at deals because they know they're going to get boom, 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 exactly what they need in the order they want to be able to quickly evaluate and make a decision. Yes, we're going to lend or no, we're going to pass at this time.
I love it. So, you know, kind of looking ahead, where do you focus? Like, where does Alternative Finance Network put, like, its focus in the industry? Is it a Weedmaps? Is it an Akerna? Is it a Trueleaf or a Curaleaf? Or is it all of them? Does it matter?
It really doesn't matter. We focus in on companies that are looking to grow, that need at least $1 million or more. And we've been very fortunate in that I got lucky in a trip to Massachusetts that I made in October to go back to Alumni Weekend. I put out a message on LinkedIn, and a guy that I didn't know who he was at the time responded, and we now are pursuing a incredibly large market with incredibly diverse and exciting potential returns where we're going in with a cannabis product and getting access to 15 to 30 times the cannabis amount needed because they've got existing lines and existing business. And it is the largest opportunity that I've seen in my career. And I am so excited about it. And we got lucky in that I put out a message on LinkedIn, divided up into three categories. You know, this is for all you LinkedIn lovers. I love LinkedIn. And I tell people that haven't used it, I'll make you $1 million in a year if you follow what I tell you to do. And it's real easy. And I don't even post that much. You're seeing more posts because I hired somebody to post for me. It's following up. I divide it up into three categories. One, I know who you are and we're currently doing something. Mm-hmm. Two, we did something in the past, but nothing is current. And three is everybody else. So a number three answered. And I asked him, I said, what made you decide to, you know, schedule a call? He says, because I've been following you for years, you look to be the expert or market leader in cannabis financing. Would you pay us a commission if we went ahead and refer deals to you? And I said, I could do that, but I could go one better. How about if we got you a line of credit where you could write it on your own paper and do it fully from, you know, seed to servicing? He He says, I love that idea. What do I got to do? I said, follow me. Come on back. Let's go ahead and get your information. So we're literally in the underwriting process right now. He's put together a pro forma for what he thinks he'd be able to do with a counter-friendly line at 5.75% to 6.5%, somewhere in there. And he's thrilled because it actually is lower priced than his existing $300 million line. So that's what I think by a $15 or $20 million counter line that he would totally qualify for. He's got great financials. Now I'm looking at a shot at the $300 of existing that we weren't even considering before. We weren't even going after. So it's an unbelievably large opportunity to get leverage and a large return in a very focused market where you can focus in on it easily and quickly by a couple of organizations, you know, that are the big dogs in that end of the industry, in the medium to large independent company. And then what I can't wait to do is I can't wait to convert one of the banks, just one, Bank of America, Key, PNC, Comerica, any of the banks that happen to have equipment leasing division. I want to come back on your show after that, and I want to have a party.
Oh, man. Honestly, the whole industry will be throwing you a party for that one.
Dude, we're going to bring down the average cost of capital from 15 or 16 to 10 or 11 if you follow me and get on the train, and let's get some of these guys. And the thing that's so exciting is they're getting a 500 to 800 point basis premium selling an HVAC system to a canna company or a, you know, grow versus if they sell it to Hilton. Because if they sell it to the Hilton Hotel, yeah, they got to price it at 5, 5.5, somewhere in there to, you know, the cannabis industry. If they're at 15, they're in the middle of the pack. If they're 11 or 12, they're the low price guy. And I think we can drive the pricing down for everybody in the industry.
How long before we get to that 6%?
Soon, because, well, 6% is available now on a wholesale level for companies that are lending in the industry. And sometimes we can tick down into the 5.5, 5.75 if their financials are very good. And I'm hoping that we might be able to get into the 4s one of these days. Right now is the best time because they have an edict to get out $100 million before 12/31. And I think it's because someone needs to keep their job for next year because they really want to get this money out on the street. And, you know, the banks have all of this capital sloshing around between the EIEDL and the PPP and the other programs. They've got more capital than they've ever seen, and they've got to get it on the streets to correct their ratios and the imbalances in their financials.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to help them. I want you to help them.
Yeah, I think Scott's our resident debt financing expert. I think we can get Scott back on.
Thank you. I would be honored. I would be honored to wear that cap.
Yeah, but Scott, keep us updated, man, on these deals that you do, because you do a lot of good ones, my friend. But
thank you.
You know, we're definitely interested in following that.
There's one other thing that I got a question for you guys in terms of this, because it just came to me Monday. So a guy calls me up, again, reached out on LinkedIn, and says, hey, can you finance the premiums on crop insurance for my cannabis guys? And I thought the crop insurance wasn't available or wasn't readily available. You guys tell me, because I know, you know, you know a lot of different areas, but
there aren't many.
There are some, but there's not. So the more insurance providers, the better for the insurance companies.
Oh, yeah.
There's just not enough of them.
Yeah, I agree. So he wants me to finance that. We said, sure. I mean, that's an easy one because you just name me as the additional insured. If something goes wrong, you know, the lender's going to get paid. Boom. And then generally they're going to have decent financials. So we're going to put together a new program for crop insurance premium financing. So we can insure the crop. We can insure it against, you know, all the weather related things. And now someone doesn't have to take a bath if there's a fire, you know, in California, obviously, you know, fires the last few years have been just devastating.
What was that company that was just absolutely wrecked by it for a while? There was a company that it was like a year later, a year and a half later, they were still having to answer to it in earnings.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, having this is pretty incredible, Scott.
And being able to finance it, oh, man. I love being a market leader. You know, that's one of the things. Like Benzinga has been a market leader, you know, in what you guys provide. It's very exciting to be out in front and, you know.
It is. Cannabis is where it's at. You know, cannabis, crypto is pretty cool too, but cannabis is awesome. Scott, yeah. we gotta go to the next interview here, my friend. But it's a pleasure having you on. We're gonna get you back on soon.
Okay, you know, we want to hear about your public markets deals.
Okay, we just announced a deal with Tilt that we did at Prime plus 3.5 for a revolver. We have a couple more public companies that we're working on right now, hoping to be able to announce maybe in between Thanksgiving and Christmas. You know
where to find the news, benzinga.com/cannabis.
That's where it's at.
Love it. Keep up the great work, guys.
Thank you so much for being here, Scott. Appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you. Founder of Alternative Finance Network.
Honestly, also, I think Tilt had some of the best earnings out there. I'm just going to say, I thought Tilt had a fabulous earnings season. Anyways, Javier, you set up this interview that's coming up, so I'm going to give you the chance to introduce it, but I just want to say thank you for letting me be a part of it because it was so much fun.
Thank you. No, I mean, it's all in there. It's all in the interview. I introduce the people, you know, that we talk to. I'm a big hip-hop head, you know that. So for me, talking to someone like Fat Five Freddy is always an honor. So stick around. Check it out.
Thank you all for being here. Tiny Pine Media, Jonathan Loveless, Mad Notes, Money Mitch, Jim Cruz. Appreciate all of you all.
Cannabis Daily every morning,
10 a.m., benzinga.com/podcasts. And I think Javier and Patrick will see you Tuesday. I'll see you the week after that on YouTube.
Yep. Woo! Happy holidays. Peace out.
I'm good, man. I am good. But you know what? I am joined by co-host Javier Hasse. Yeah. Whose birthday is today? Ladies and gentlemen, Javier is turning 56 years old as of today. He looks fantastic. Please wish him a happy birthday. Javi, it's good to be with you, man. Honestly, I've missed a lot of cannabis hours recently, so I'm super excited to be back.
Oh, man, and what a guest we have today. We have a couple very interesting guests. No news today. We'll just jump right into it. We have the man, the legend himself, Fat Five Freddy. If you're a hip hop head like me, you gotta know Fat Five Freddy. He is a staple of the hip hop world. He is a visual artist, a filmmaker, also very prominent in the street art movement. We'll talk a little bit about that. And he is joined by now his new partner, Bernard Noble. Bernard spent 13 years in prison for two freaking joints. Now he's out, so. He's joined forces with Fat Five Freddy and Crew Relief to launch a brand called Be Noble. This is Crew Relief's first big national social equity focused brand. So very, very excited about the discussion we'll be having today. What do you think, Elliot?
I'm super excited. I don't want to take too much away from what they're going to say about it. So I think it's important to have these discussions, important to put this in the forefront as we move into a new year and hopefully new laws in cannabis and hopefully laws that set these gentlemen up for success.
Yeah.
And others.
They're telling me, by the way, through the in-ear, Bernard was sentenced to 13 years, but served seven.
Seven too many.
Made it any better.
Yeah. Not any better. But I say we get started. If you're good to go, I'm super pumped for this.
Let's bring him on.
There he is. Now, prior Bernard. To us getting on here, he was like, you can call me Fab, you can call me Freddy. Fred, I was thinking Mr. Five, if that works. But also the man with the best hat. How you guys doing today?
Good. Doing good. And I was telling you guys before we came on that this hat was a gift to match the colors, the dominant color of the Be Noble brand to wear at our launch event. This is shamelessly promote the Be Noble two joints, representative of the two joints that Bernard was sentenced to 13 years hard labor, but he served seven. And I was able to, I met him as he walked out of prison with my cameras rolling.
Wow. How long had you been planning that?
Well, I made a film called Grass is Greener, which you guys could see on Netflix if you haven't. Please watch.
You should.
Thank you. And the initial idea was to show that cannabis had a connection to America's music from jazz all the way through hip hop. The most prominent acts were big cannabis aficionados, and many great cannabis songs were made in the 1920s and 30s, as well as reggae acts and then hip hop acts in the 90s. A lot of them I introduced on Your MTV Rap. So I thought, wow, this is a cool way to tell the story of cannabis, the history. But then when I picked the criminal justice situation to focus on, that was Bernard's case. He was in prison at that time. There was a Vice show, Weedekit, that had did an episode on him. I said, let's focus on this case. Bernard was in prison. We interviewed his mom and three sisters. And then that turned into a very emotional moment, really sad. And then luckily, through work, Bernard's case was so egregious that people had were fighting hedge fund guys and major prison reform guys like Jason Flom and Daniel Loeb, a big hedge fund guy, were fighting to get Bernard out. And they won. And so I heard he got a parole finally. I flew back and to film that, which you'll see in Grass is Greener on Netflix. And then I met him as he walked out of prison. And it was sort of a call to action. Meet this really nice dude, walks out like, what is going on? I can't believe I had to do all this time for two joints. I said, yeah, I can't believe it either. And the Be Noble brand grew out of what I learned making that movie. And now we're on the shelves in 9 states, also giving 10% of what we make to organizations helping to free people like Bernard, get people's records expunged, and teach people of color, those most victimized, how to get jobs in this growing cannabis green rush.
Yeah, man. Gotta get that money for the good causes.
Be noble.
Be noble. What a noble cause, for sure. What about you, Bernard? Like, from your side, how did y'all, you know, feel? Tell us a little bit about how you connect with Freddie, right? How it feels to come out of prison, how you feel about the support that your cause, you know, has spurred, and how this translates into support for others, right?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, I'm like a bunch of normal people, and the journey with meeting Fev is kind of short and sweet. I watched him on TV most of my life like anybody else. I couldn't have fathom ever meeting him. So yes. Right now, still to the day, is also real. He a real good friend of mine. And throughout this trial, you know, when he appeared in my life at the darkest time, my life changed from there. Having this platform to be helped by people, like he mentioned before, Jason Flom, Daniel Loeb, it was millions of people that needed help. So I'm blessed for the opportunity, you know, and my biggest thing now is learning this stuff. We have a lot of not legal here in Louisiana. So I'll be a good face for that fight on that. And learning about the plant, something I've been beat up for most of my life about. I don't have to be scared because I was misinformed, and getting this education is been an amazing journey. Well, like you said, also we donate 10% of the proceeds to the organizations that help people out like me, you know, and that's amazing for me because in my life, I couldn't never think about 10% of nothing of mine going to anybody, you know. So it's amazing. I get to help. I get to spread the love. I get to talk. I'm the face. I'm going to be the face here, like I said before. I'm going to be the ambassador, and I'm the new Mandela in Louisiana.
So it wasn't Louisiana where those 7 years you were sentenced to there. So, I'm curious. As you start to see these states start to decriminalize, you know, New Jersey released several hundred thousand or put several hundred thousand cases up for discussion. And you see states to do that more and more. You know, how does that make you feel, for one, you know, that you served 7 years for two joints? It's incredible. Like, just saying that.
Yeah, it is.
Sorry, go ahead, please.
I'm sorry. No. What I do take from this experience that it was a bunch of throughout my life it was misformed information. I never was led properly on this thing with this marijuana. I was being locked up while it was profitable for other people. I got a lot of experience because of that with our draconian law that we have here. And it feels good now to be out of the dark. So it was actually, I took one for the team. I, It was just misinformed information. That's where my ignorance came from. So I blame it on not being exposed, but I'm up and running now. You can't put no tricks on me no more.
I'd just like to add to what Bernard is saying. The entire country for 80 years was misinformed. And my film, Grass is Greener, we lay that out. There were medical research done in the 30s and then later during Nixon's administration that proved this plant had medicinal benefits. It wasn't as bad as they made it out to be. And so we were all misinformed. And even people that are in the States, this, you know, gateway drug and all these lies demonized a very good, helpful, beneficial plant that has killed no one. 100,000 people alone die from alcohol poisoning, you know, just alcohol poisoning, besides those killed by drunk drivers and stuff. So a whole lot of bad stuff heaped on cannabis.
And that's also, it's been amazing for me to be with Fab and for this deal to go on. I've learned so much about the plant with cannabinoids and sativas and, you know, the different stuff that's in the plant that I've been using all my life. Again, miseducation, you know, misinformed. I was ignorant. My ignorance come from not being around the right group of people to tell me better. But I'm here now. It's super, super exciting. And I'm ready to just spread this message. I'm learning as I go. And it's just been fun. I didn't think I could do it this well, but it's a part of me. And I take my role in this. And also, like I said before, something that me and Fab is going to put together in my book. You were almost actually right on me serving 13 years, but it's actually 10 that the public don't know about. So that's going to be the new thing to come. So it was real close. I served 13 years for something that was worth $2 on the street. You know, and it was damaging, but I'm not bitter about that. I just want to show the people that it could be done in another way. That was politics. It was here in Louisiana. It was definitely a color thing. I was used, for example, here to threaten people of color. He did what he did. They wouldn't let me go, and I had to fight. Fab showed up, and here we are.
What do you say to these people that are being released, you know, under similar circumstances? I mean, I know the message of the 10% of your brand going to people, or to, I would say, organizations that help people being released from prison. But is there a home in cannabis for all of these people that have been so negatively affected unjustly?
I mean, you know, we would hope so. This is the thing. It's unfortunate the way this is playing out, but it is steps in the right direction. Each state gets to set up their own laws. And New York, where I'm at, which just voted to legalize this summer, I'm told we have the most progressive legislation in the country. One of the people that's responsible for that, a woman named Cassandra Frederick, also featured in my film, Grass is Greener, the New York, now she's the National Director of Drug Policy Alliance, was the number one lobbyist up in Albany, the capital of New York, fighting for the legislation, the bill authored by Crystal People Stokes, who's from up in Buffalo. And she had this bill for like several years, and Cuomo was battling elements of this legislation. And Cassandra was like, no, 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 no. And when Cuomo had his back against the wall, luckily we were able to get this legislation passed. And so now they're dialing all the facilities, which should get a lot of people of color will get a shot. A lot of those most victimized will get a shot to be in this business, dispensaries, cultivation, et cetera. And so we're waiting now to see how that pans out, but it's looking good. Lots of records expunged. So this is the work that needs to be done in many states. And hopefully people can get a shot to participate in the green rush, which is now officially on.
Yeah, and it's actually making progress here. My city then decriminalized. So I think that I've been a major part of that. It's not out in the public yet, but the crucial and the unjust things was did to me for $5. It got out to the city. You know what I'm saying? So now it's 14 grams or less when it shouldn't have been this from the start. So with all of the dirt that happened here on a political, politic level, I'm part of decriminalization here, and we move into the next step. So I sacrifice. I took one for the team, so I'm going to be noble all the way through, babe.
And also, once again, just to point out that Louisiana, we're going down. Well, Bernard's there. I'm going down next week to take part in a big cannabis gathering because medical cannabis is coming to Louisiana in January. So Bernard, of course, is going to be first online for that, but also to continue to raise the awareness that there are too many people in Louisiana prisons and many other prisons for small amounts of cannabis, for any amount of cannabis. If it's nonviolent, they should be out of prison now.
Yeah. So it's an amazing journey, you know, and it took a long time. I'm just glad to be a part of it. The struggle I went through when Fab and all other people found me, that was my dues to pay to get into this business the way I am, because I didn't have the kind of money. So I was a sacrifice to be a part of this business. I'm super excited, and well, let's go.
That's an optimistic way to look at it, man. You said earlier, right? I'm not bitter, right? You know what happened to you, what they did to you is BS. There's no way around it, but I like that we're moving forward, right? I have a little bit of a strange question for you. I know it's loaded, right? But at least from what I know from Freddie, right? You know, the hip-hop movement in general and graffiti and street art movements are not huge friends of the establishment, right? So it must have taken a little bit of mental work and actual work to reconcile, right, your mission with the capitalistic sponsor that to a certain extent Curaleaf is, right? I feel you found in a certain way a way to do good by doing well, right?
But I mean
tell us a little bit about that journey, and then specifically about the 10% of proceeds that is being contributed to different earth causes, right? Which causes, you know, specifically are you benefiting?
Right. So basically that was the idea. I saw as I was working on the film, and I'm meeting people like Burner, who built the cookies, you know, giant, and, you know, big up to Burner, who's battling cancer. He just got surgery, and prayers up for him. But learning and seeing what is going on and what is coming, and the amount of profit and the potential for that was all amazing. This is like, you know, Killer Mike said something in my film which really resonated. Like, if we don't really get a part of this, we failed, because this is an opportunity to create generational wealth. And I'm like, wow, what can be done? But at the same time, I wanted to create awareness. So I figured, let's try to do this together. We can create a brand with some quality cannabis that can raise awareness. There's a QR code on the packaging when you are blessed to get this Be Noble product, and then messaging in the back, which talks about what this product is about. The QR code takes you deeper into Bernard's story and the bigger issue. And so we felt like, wow, this is an amazing way. Had no idea that a company of the scale of Curaleaf, but when they stepped up to become real partners, to show the commitment that they wanted to go full on, and now creating the first national social equity cannabis brand was amazing and a blessing. And Bernard was like, let's go all the way and let's do this. And here we go. So we just started. The product hit the shelves in July. The date that was picked was 7/13, representative of the 7 years of a 13-year sentence Bernard saved. So we've been messaging in a very loud and direct way about what we're doing. Curaleaf is full on putting the full engine behind us. So here we go. And we just
have to
share the story.
I actually just remember you have this thing where you call like entrepreneurial activism.
Yeah, that was what it just felt
like. That's what it is.
Yes, exactly.
So you had this in mind years ago, right? Like even before all this even started, right?
Yeah, it was just like, man, you know, I'm a pure creative, as you know, visual art, filmmaking, you know, close to music has been my life, and cannabis has been an integral part of that. And, you know, once again, I was like, wow, here's a way to address these issues, plus to put a quality phone to put a quality product on the shelves. Bernard, turn yourself around. There you go.
Yeah, I had a call coming in. I'm trying to get it off of the phone.
Tell them we on Benzinga, baby. Tell them to wait.
I'm not going to tell them anything. I'm going to just not answer.
Yeah, sure. That's right. Don't answer.
Let me double down for a second there, Bernard.
I'm super excited. These people trying to catch me. I want to be quoted on this, how excited I am to be the face of Injustice, where I can spread this message, because I never thought that it would work this positive for me. It's just a good feeling all the way around, man. I'm so excited about everything that's going on. I'm learning as I go, and I'm gonna be good with this. We're going to get the brand out. We're going to tell a story, and I'm going to go on. I never had an opportunity to do things like this. I read stories like this about other people, but I want to just take 1 second, and I want to swing the camera around at some of my photos over here, you know, and I get time to spin and look at these things. And I say that I'm used to seeing it happen to other people, but I sit in my crib and I have my own memorabilia, you know, so that's exciting. It's my season. All of this was put in place for a reason.
We're growing
with time. Yeah. So I'm just.
Oh man. They got him. They got him. They got him. All right. So while we're waiting on him, I'm sure he'll be coming back.
Yeah, he'll come back.
Yeah, Aaron, if you wouldn't mind. You know, I want to go back to Curaleaf, and I think best to do it when Bernard's here. So, but Fab, if you wouldn't mind, you know, you were touching on earlier, you know, how cannabis has a history through jazz back to the 20s. Can you talk about your early work and any presence it may have had there?
Well, you know, once again, I keep bringing up my film, Grass is Greener. I give a snapshot of my parents. My dad was a jazz dude. Max Roach, the great jazz drummer, was my godfather. Him and my father grew up together. And cannabis was in the house. My dad and his friends gathered. They discussed everything going on in the world. And cannabis was a big part of that. And so I just had been around the plant, but, you know, when I was really young, my dad was like, look, if you're going to smoke, just do it in the house. So, you know, be safe, because it was this thing where you could get caught up and get into trouble. And so that's how I grew up. But I was also like, my dad has so much information coming through the house. And I realized, like, there's articles about the benefits. I mean, I can remember as a kid, in coming up in Brooklyn, New York in the 70s, always into reggae music, Peter Tosh made a record called Legalize It, and where he sang about the medical benefits way before we had medical cannabis. He was like, legalize it and I will advertise it, which I thought was just great. And so that was something that was underneath me, and the people in the counterculture and people that were fighting. Every year they would, the organization Normal would give a big cannabis event in Washington Square Park and give out hundreds of joints, and to really confront the fact that this plant has been demonized and people have been criminalized unjustly for way too long. So that was underneath what I was doing. I was watching inroads being made in California and Colorado. And once again, Snoop Dogg, you know, numerous songs about cannabis, and Cypress Hill and all these guys. I mean, you know, one of my favorite cannabis songs, I Got Five on It by the Loonies out of San Fran, was like, that's hip hop at its core, which helped to push this into the mainstream without question. So just, you know, watching the dominoes fall in place, but still so much more needs to be fixed and addressed. So right now we've got high quality cannabis with a serious message on shelves in 9 states now. So it's pretty amazing.
What are you using your cannabis nowadays for? Like, what are you you like? What's inspiring? What is it inspiring you to create right now?
You know, cannabis, once again, has been a big part of my life. It's a part of my process. It's like, you know, and I realize now as you learn more about the medical benefits, I've been self-medicating without really being aware that I have been. And you think about that through the years. And I even thought about when I read an article that PTSD, which they typically treat that with opioids, like so many things are, when I realized that PTSD can be treated with cannabis, I realized that the stuff that Black folks have gone through in America using cannabis has helped PTSD, like police being in fear and all these things. So we've been medicating without fully understanding. And that's one of the things that I'm really excited about is as cannabis begins to open up and hopefully within this administration, somehow taken off of the federal schedule, the real medical advancements. I just saw that Nova special on the work being done and how much more work needs to be done to really isolate the other cannabinoids and really begin to dial in on what they can assist us with, I think would be just incredible. That excites me along with helping get people out of prison.
So, you know, kind of just industry centric right now in the cannabis space, there has been maybe some criticism right now that ESG and social equity is not going in the right direction. You know, and it's not that there are a lack of programs. You know, I think most of the larger companies like Curaleaf, you know, they do give back to their communities. Even many of the smaller local based ones do as well. But it's such a large issue that it's so hard to tackle at any type of expedited rate. So I'd love to understand from you and your point of view, what can these companies do to spurn that further? Who can they support? I mean, do they create jobs? Do they create work for these, you know, criminalized unjustly people? I'd love to hear from you, like any thoughts you have there.
You know, I think what Curaleaf has done with our brand Be Noble is a model that I think other MSOs, multi-state operators in cannabis, should follow. They should find someone or some entity that has this passion to address these issues. And they should use the plant and the proceeds from that to give to some organizations. That's what we're doing. It's a model. And, you know, it's best foot forward at a critical time for a very critical situation. So they can step up in this way. We're an example now. You know, you can put things on the shelves that also raise the awareness. People can hit the QR code, read the back, go to the Be Noble website and get more involved and understand what's up. And I think that's what needs to happen. We need to see more of that. And then we could, like, one of the things that Killer Mike says is, like, you know, we need to help put politicians in office that can really address the issues that we are concerned about. I mean, that's how politics really works in America. And once again, those are the things that inspired and motivated me. And it's interesting with what happened with the New York governor being ousted and the new lieutenant governor really aggressively pushing this even further. Yeah. And the lieutenant governor, Brian Benjamin, a person of color right here in Harlem. We sat down with him a couple of weeks ago and a bunch of other people of color in cannabis, prominent folks, to give him some insight as to what can work better, what you should be concerned about. Just not overtax and overregulate, because I just saw on NPR once again that 80 to 90% of what's produced in California goes to the illicit market. That's clearly because there's so many hurdles for these growers, those that want to play the legal game, to basically make it work. And so that's a fascinating figure that hopefully we can improve on that here in New York, which I think we're going. I think we're moving in the right direction. But once again, the model that I think other players in big cannabis can do is look at what Curaleaf is doing with our brand, Be Noble, and let's step it up and let's get some more awareness out on those shelves so that the people can know more about what's happening.
Love it, man. I got one last one. I know, you know, our regular viewers are sick of hearing this, but I am from Argentina. I am in Argentina. We're seeing this process where cannabis is slowly regulated. We're seeing similar processes for legalization and regulation in Peru and Ecuador and in Panama and Costa Rica, even in Mexico. They're about to, you know, toying with the idea of going adult use. Right. And many of our regulators look up north for examples and learnings. Right. You've shared some of these right now as it relates to the corporate world. But which other things, you know, do you think that we should be paying attention to and taking and learning from your experience to ensure that our cannabis legalization and regulation processes come accompanied by social justice, by restorative justice, by expungement, you know?
I mean, you know, the thing that I learned, I was curious about, okay, we understand the system, the dynamics in America. We had racism. We had this guy, Harry Anslinger, that after alcohol.
Very nice guy. We like him.
Right? They needed a new demon to basically go after, and they concocted this fear and the Reefer Madness era. There literally was a movie. If you guys don't, in the audience don't realize, they made movies, short films that played in theaters about the evils of marijuana. That was all brought to bear by Harry Anslinger. And so so late in his life, early 60s, I understand, when the United Nations was being formed, it was put out that for countries to be a part of the United Nations, they had to agree to criminalize cannabis. Bernard is back joining us, by the way.
Thanks. Sorry about that, guys.
That's okay. I've been talking it up. So basically, what I learned, and I think this is something that we need to be more exposure on, the fact that Harry Anslinger had influence at the United Nations and got incoming countries to agree to criminalize cannabis, because there was no history of cannabis being even probably used in this way. It was clearly racism. It was the fact that, like, Mexicans and black folks making jazz were smoking this plant, and white folks wanted to come and enjoy, and racists didn't want to see that happen. So I think in other countries, the reason cannabis was criminalized in other countries around the world was also as a result of the efforts of Harry Anslinger. Yes. And I think if these governments step back and go, wait a minute, Argentina, whatever country it is, why did we criminalize this harmless plant? So now they need to unravel that. And so there's benefits that could serve the entire population. I mean, look, we've all got some alcohol. I got some wine and some hard liquor over here, but cannabis has killed no one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on that note, since I'm back, thank you, sorry. I have a friend that's going to be so good as an example of how her consumption of cannabis versus all the man-made pills that she have to take, bro. If you could hear her story, she deal with me. And if you could hear her story versus the pills, I keep telling her she just need to go live and just talk about the man-made pills versus the plant. She can't function unless, and it's a powerful thing, the medical benefits on the plane, and I'm glad to be a part of it. I took a big sacrifice, as I was saying before.
Well said, and a great point, Bernard, and I think that leads me into to at least one more question for you. Where does this take you in terms of, you know, your future in cannabis? Do you become an advocate for your friends who you know have been treated unjustly? Where do we see Bernard Noble? And obviously, you're going to carry this brand with you wherever you go. But I think there's obviously a lot more that we can look for from you, right?
Oh, most definitely. Well, most of all, what's important to me, a lot of people that I talked to when I was in prison, you know, I promised them that if something happened for me, I'm going to come back and make something happen. So things like generational wealth, I never had a chance to hear that a lot. That's something that I'm looking forward to having in my life now with my family. Happy birthday to you too, man. I have a bunch of kids. I have a football team. So this move is super, super exciting for me. I know it's gonna be an amazing journey. So I can't fathom what's up next, bro. I sit around the house and I look at the pictures and all kind of ideas come to my head that I'm gonna be embarking on, and I'm just super, super excited and ready to go.
One of the next projects I just want to throw out that, you know, Bernard has been telling me, and we're going to put this in effect beginning of the year. Bernard wants to tell his story in the form of a book. And so we're going to be working on that, where he's going to tell this entire story, which is going to deeply involve the culture of New Orleans. Because the ironic thing, once again, back to my film Grass is Greener, jazz is born in New Orleans. So it's been, and I've been around the world. One of my favorite places in the world is that little town in New Orleans. There's an energy there that's really special, which is
a very weed friendly energy too. By the way, like there's a city to consume cannabis in. It's New Orleans.
Thank you. Exactly. And one of the things, in fact, Steve D'Angelo, who was one of the fathers of this cannabis activism and the business. His Last Prisoner Project is an organization that's helping to get everybody out of prison for nonviolent cannabis. He says that behind cannabis coming to New Orleans is that it was a very active port, coming people traffic back and forth from different islands in the Caribbean, which is how cannabis likely got to New Orleans. And so it was a fascinating history, knowing what I know about jazz and how the music was born there. So that was delightful. But then to turn around and realize that they've got these draconian criminal justice laws and putting people for for-profit prisons and criminalizing people for minuscule amounts of cannabis, giving them life sentences, practically decades in prison. It was a big kind of irony for me. This place that I love so much also has these major problems. So we're working. That's one of the things that I'm going to address when we talk, when I go down and Bernard and I give this talk. I'm going to bring out the fact that this is a great town, but we all need to work to make things better, to fix these things that are glaring problems. And I think clearly there's new people getting elected. There's a district attorney down there, a new district attorney in that town who's an African-American that is aware of what Bernard went through. And we're going to meet with these people and talk with them and hopefully make it better.
Yeah, he's already in office, been doing a good job. And I'm excited to get with him. He said he was a fan of mine before he made it to the district attorney's office. So I'm just loving life right now, man. I'm really loving life, and all I'm looking for is progress. I'm gonna talk about these hard things. I come from a hard life, and I don't know, bro. I'm just built this way, I guess, and I love it. Something in me have always been hungry for what's happening in my life, but I didn't have the right tools and right money, the right background. I know I didn't look right, but 40 years later, you know, Fab Five Freddy came in my life, and you know, all of that hard shit is so I had to go through it to get where I'm at, sitting here with everybody on this interview. So let's go,
man. Cheers to that. Congrats.
Good luck, man, for sure.
You know, this for-profit prison concept just gives me the chills.
Yeah.
Much of our audience is comprised by investors, right? And I know you want to make money, but there's ways to make money, right? And where you put your money, who you support, whether it's buying a company stock or buying products, like Be Noble, really matters, and it makes a difference, right? So
we live in a world of entrepreneurs. Business, this business is a part of life. I want to be a necessity, just like a toilet in everybody's house. So this is some good stuff that's going on, and I'm all for it. I read about everybody else's success, their struggles. So here mine is saying the word story don't justify for what I've been through in life. I need another name, because my life is not a story.
Indeed, man.
Well said, man. Well said. Also, one quick question before Javier wraps us up here. What's the market price for B Noble, the two joints?
Well, that's a good question. So that varies a little, and I can't give you an exact. What I'm learning constantly is every state is doing something a little different. So that slight variation, I'm sure, but it's still affordable and the quality is exceptional once again. So whatever market we're in, and we're in 9 markets now, we're competitive with whatever else is on display and for sale. That's for sure. But once again, we've got a little something special connected to it, which is Bernard's story and the story of too many others that we need to get out of prison, and we need to get their lives back on deck so that they could sit back and enjoy this Be Noble or whatever cannabis they like, and then and feel a lot better. That pressure that you have to, is it all good? I mean, that was cool and interesting. You don't want to live your life like that. You know, when we
not at all.
And we went under the bleachers in high school, you know, to have a puff. But at this point in the game, come on now. Like, we sit back and have a bud or have a beer or a glass of wine. Let's inhale some fine cannabis, preferably Be Noble. You'll enjoy it. And then life's a little more better.
I look forward to trying it.
I just want to throw in, I really feel like I'm a part of history, man, because this struggle been going on for a very, very long time. And for me to be chosen as a person of color to be the picture of all this damage, and, you know, it's an honor. I feel good. I feel powerful. And I'm ready to let it go.
Love that, man.
Yeah.
Top 5 Freddy, Bernard Noble, thank you so much for joining us at Benzinga Cannabis Hour. Everyone watching, go check out Be Noble Cannabis. Now it's legal.
Yeah.
Go figure.
And check out That Grass Is Greener, baby. It's number one film.
Fantastic movie.
Thanks for having us, guys. I appreciate
it. Thank you, man. Appreciate
thank you, Mark, gentlemen.
Enjoy your birthday, Javier.
Happy birthday to you, bro.
Did you know nearly all stock price changes of 10% or more result from a single news headline? That's right. News headlines have a unique ability to drive stock prices up or down. These news catalysts create trading opportunities every day. All you need is a little help to reach out and take them. And if you're looking to grow your portfolio, it doesn't matter if your investment budget is small or big. An easy-to-read stream of news headlines will increase your opportunities to profit from price changes in the stock market, consolidate a knowledge-based investment strategy, and grow your portfolio. All you need is Benzinga Pro and its powerful news alerts, price tracking, and portfolio monitoring to make a positive change in your trading performance. We've already helped thousands of retail traders across the world, and they could not be happier. Increase your market knowledge, boost your exposure to big movers, and make informed trades before major price changes. The opportunities are all around you. Subscribe now, and we'll skyrocket your portfolio today.